WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our WNST programming brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets and Wise Conversations coming your way. I had a great conversation with Rob Santoni. We're talking about all sorts of things around here. I'm about to do this crab cake tour. We'll be telling you about it each and every week on Fridays and then into the summer. I may have a little something up my sleeve for our 30th anniversary here at WNST as well. And our friends at State Fair and our friends at Fadley's will be contributing to that, our longtime sponsors. And Don, I know you've been out at State Fair. I've been there this week. Evan has given us the green light to do some outdoor socially distanced seating next month. So back in May, we're going to get back out there. You can get back to your French press coffee and your crab cakes and shrimp and grits and chicken and waffles. And I'll watch you eat all that meat on your eggs while I'm enjoying myself. We got a great, we talk about Baltimore Positive. I know we're time short. Sometimes we get together with local politicians, they get called into meetings and they're busy because we're fixing this place here. Don, go ahead. Without further ado, I'm going to let you do the honors here.
Oh, our good friend, my good buddy from the 44th District in Baltimore County, Senator Charles Sidnour. Welcome to Baltimore Positive, Senator.
Look, thank you very much for the invitation. I was wondering when I was going to get the invite, so I'm glad to get it last month to come on.
See this? We're starting trouble with your friends, Don.
Oh, right? My goodness. I you know, you can always call. You can come on. I'm going to standing. You tell your buddies down there, too. Standing invite. Anytime somebody wants to come on and make some news, we're ready to do that. Senator, before we get in, and you are on a tight schedule because anybody that's ever been in Annapolis, the last week, you can't describe it. Maybe we will ask you to describe it. But first of all, tell folks where the 44th is and why you're so proud to represent the 44th.
Sure. So the 44th is the only legislative district that covers communities in both Baltimore City and Baltimore County. I started representing District 44B, which is the Baltimore County portion of the district back after election in 2014. So you're talking about communities of portions of Catonsville, Lockern, Woodlawn, and those communities in Baltimore County. In Baltimore City, you're talking about communities surrounding Dunkirk, Harlem Park, Sandtown, Winchester, and the like. So that's a real diverse community. I'd like to think of it as a microcosm of Maryland, and for me, I think it's the best district in this.
Of course, you better say that. Well, now we're gonna make you really unpopular with some folks because Nestor is about to go, as he said, on this incredible crab cake journey. So, if people are coming to your district and they say, "Senator, take me to get a great crab cake," where do you take them?
That's a good question.
That's the question. Senator, this is what I've been going through here, okay? Because we started these shows at Fadley's. Costas has been with me forever. I had family in town. And I said, there's so many places, and I need to try them all so I can make more recommendations than I already make. I think this is going to be a great conversation starter, right? Like crab cakes. We all like to argue about that, right?
You know, if I were to get a crab cake, generally speaking, we've gone to the Salsa Grill or the Windsor Inn, which is just in the 10th District outside of 44.
I have had the crab cake at the Windsor.
Yeah,
it's delicious.
Pretty good.
Been a little while.
But you know, the Salsa Grill is a hit. Is that in the 44th?
Yes, it is. Right in Woodlawn.
Right in a little strip shopping center, Nestor, in Woodlawn, right on Security Boulevard. Incredible food. A hidden gem, right, Senator?
Absolutely. It's funny. I did a post this last summer just kind of talking about some of the local restaurants, and that was one of those posts that everybody was talking about their favorite dish at the restaurant. Me, I like their cream of crab soup. I mean, it's delicious, so.
Now, people love the Salsa Grill. So thank you for those recommendations. In the midst of all this, I'm going to tell people, I remember you and I go way back, and we've known each other for many years. One of my favorite memories is when you were actually deciding whether or not to run for House of Delegates. you asked to meet with county executive cabinets, and you and I and the county executive met at what I called his external office, the Towson Diner. As you know, it's the external office for Jim Smith, Kevin Kamenetz, everybody that's been county executive before COVID. That was your external office. And county executive asked you, he always believed this, and Nestor and I talked a lot about this, Senator, when he was thinking about running for office. County executive said to you, it's the Roger Mudd, Ted Kennedy question. Why do you want to be an elected official? Do you remember him asking you that?
I do.
What did you tell him?
It is a thing about bettering communities and trying to just improve the lot for people within the district. And that's something that I continue to try to do today. I mean, this is an opportunity that only a few people have at the state level. And it's about bettering our community by serving them, by listening to them, getting out and trying to correct things within the law to make things better for people. And like I said, I continue to try to do that. It's an honor to do it and to think that people actually take the vote for you and it's been a blessing.
Well, you've done that, and right now you are in the midst. You've been a leader on an issue, as Nestor alluded to when we began the interview. You are going to run in a couple of minutes back to a committee. You're going to try to hammer out a final agreement on police reform, an issue that Nestor and I have covered extensively here on Baltimore Positive. Let me give you, from 10,000 feet, what I think the public sees, and then you tell us where we are.
Sure.
Trying to follow what's been written, it looks like the House passed a package, came over to the Senate. If you believe what you read, it appeared there was an agreement in principle to accept the House bill, and then somehow overnight, the agreement fell apart. Is my recap accurate so far?
So what had happened? The Senate had about nine or so bills dealing with police reform. The House, they had more than one large bill that dealt with a number of issues. So there's just been conversation on how you manage those number of bills versus the one bill. And yes, there was some agreements in principle. For whatever reason, what we were attempting to do was to have everything ready by Friday so that the things could be presented to the governor by Saturday. And we, for whatever reason, things didn't get done in the timeline that we wanted. So we regrouped, continued conversations over the weekend, and the House sent their bills over. So it's a combination of policies that were passed out of the Senate and a combination of policies that were passed over in the House. I think each House had some things that they were not willing to give on, and so it was trying to figure out how to meld the two. And so I think we've come to that decision or now. So
what's important to you in this? What do you need to get done that you would feel like I can sign off on that? I can't live with that.
You know, interestingly enough, most of the package that had come out of the Senate, I was all right with. The one thing that gave me some level of discomfort was the way that we had defined use of force. And that was me looking at it in the context of how some decisions had been made by courts using similar language.
Well, Senator, we're watching this right now in Minnesota, right? I mean, this is happening every day in real time to say, all right, what is the law and what are we going to enforce here? And then if it comes to that, how does this play out, right? And we're seeing it in real time.
Very much so. So the use of force language that we're going to be using is going to It's going to be based off of the House language with a few tweaks here and there. We just voted it out of committee, I think yesterday. So these bills are going to be on the floor today.
Are the issues, Senator, I love the way Nestor said it, what's important to you? Are the issues surrounding discipline of police officers and law enforcement Bill of Rights, are they important to you? And are they, do you expect them to be in some form in the final bill?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It is important. The way that we're creating this administrative process, it is important. But most important to me, and I've said this in the paper, was how we were going to create this language around use of force. Because again, a lot of people, when they think about LIBOR and the administrative process, that's something that happens after the fact. It's civil. I mean, you want to have a good process, but what's of more concern to me is when I'm out on the street and the guy that's been given to that law enforcement officer about how they're going to exact force on me or anyone else. And that's always been the most important piece to me.
Senator, are you concerned? This is the most, and Nestor, I think you would agree, of all of the issues that you and I discuss, this is the most complex with the most amount of layers. I mean, we spent well over an hour with Justin Fenton, who wrote on the Gun Trace Task Force and written a phenomenal book, We Own This City. We've talked to members of the FOP. We've talked to academics who study crime. We've talked to police chiefs. So we've tried to involve everyone. And are you concerned that as we move in this direction of police reform, that it makes it more difficult to recruit police officers and that it encourages police officers to be passive? Talk about that issue a little bit, because you want your community to be safe.
Absolutely. I think that's something that we all want, is for our communities to be safe. With regards to whether or not it's going to hinder the hiring of officers, we've heard that argument. I don't think so. In fact, there's language within the bill that was speaking to providing educational opportunities to our law enforcement officers. So I think what it is, it's just over the course of time, certainly since the introduction of not only body cameras, but cell phone cameras and the like, many people's eyes have been opened to the reality that many people have had to deal with when law enforcement goes the wrong way. And it can be brutal at times. It can be difficult to watch. And really, I think me and most of the legislators down here, we're just trying to make certain that our law enforcement officers, as they're protecting us, that they're doing so in a constitutional manner, in a manner that's not violating either their training, our Constitution, our civil rights, and so this was our opportunity to do so. So hopefully we've gotten it right. I'm thinking that there are many officers that will testify or talk to you in, offline, and they see the issues as well. And they understand why we're trying to do what we're trying to do. I mean, some of the things, obviously the FOP has said this, I mean, some of the things have been hard pills for them to swallow, but, the fact of the matter is there's something that has to be done, because if we continue down this road, it's not a good thing.
Well, we're 6 years out on Freddie Gray, which really begat me beginning these kinds of conversations to find, you know, a better society, right? I mean, that's, you're down in Annapolis. I need to ask you this because I know our time, we're coming up on that. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about crab cakes in your community and local places. This last year, for every salsa grill, every wins, every restaurant, every person that found themselves unemployed, without housing, all of these things that happen, on top of police issues and all the things that, you know, when you run for office, you weren't thinking, oh, plague's going to come. We'll have answers for that as well. Vaccines for your constituents, all of these things. The last year of COVID, speak to that a little bit and how much it's changed your job.
You know, and that's a really good question, because it is obviously it's changed it tremendously, because usually you would see mostly the elected officials out and about trying to shake hands in the communities and the like, and all that was shut down. And it was March 18th, I remember last year, when the General Assembly had its last day in session. And we kind of went home trying to figure things out. I work for a nonprofit outside of doing this in Annapolis, and wasn't expecting my company to shut down like everybody else and tell people to be, all right, let's begin working from home. And thankfully, I mean, I was blessed to have that opportunity to work from home. And obviously, there were a number of people who couldn't. But those first few weeks, I mean, I think I was probably just as concerned as everyone else with going out to the grocery store and not knowing exactly what we were dealing with, and seeing the number of people who were passing, the difficulty for our business communities trying to keep things running. As a legislator, really those first few months going, actually it would go into the fall, dealing with all of the unemployment inquiries that we were getting from community members. I mean, it was overwhelming. My staff, rather than dealing with some of the issues that we usually deal with during the interim, it was, staff trying to connect, our residents to the unemployment office and trying to address and trying to make certain that they knew that somebody was there trying to help, and really not being all that successful, because ultimately, while the legislature and other legislators, we were there as a conduit, the ultimate responsibility for getting these unemployment checks out and the like rest with the executive office. So, I mean, we could kick and scream and say, look, my constituent needs help. But I mean, they could only operate as fast as they could operate. So you had constituents who were really upset because they had no money. So they're getting upset with you, and really they don't want to hear, well, this isn't, I mean, we're the middleman. We're trying to get the executive to do what they need to do. They didn't want to hear that. They wanted their money. So that was extremely difficult. And I know me and other legislators, I think our thing was, look, we don't mind taking hits when it's something that we've done. But here we were taking hits and it was something that was out of our control. So, I mean, thankfully, we had a number of legislators this year try to put in some legislative fixes for how unemployment is supposed to work. So, I mean, that was some of the big issues. I know some of our restaurants, like I said, they've had a difficult time. It was just a couple weeks ago, I think it was in the Business Journal, that Collins Seafood and Grill, which is in Randallstown, great place, it had to close. And that was really sad, because it was one of these restaurants that had good crab cakes and really good food, and the management really was trying to do a lot in the community. So, I mean, and I'm sure that there are other stories, there are other Collins and things that are out there. I mean, Dimitri's closed. So, I mean, there are a number of businesses that have had really difficult times. So.
Senator, I know you got to run and hammer at the agreement on police reform. Before you do, are there one or two items that you're proud of this session that when you look back, you got done? They were your ideas. They were your initiatives. You put together a coalition. Don't want to let you run without getting a chance to brag on what you did.
I appreciate that. This session, I was able to get at least, I think, about almost half of my bills out of the Senate. So far, Senate Bill 1, House Bill 1, which is the bill to help to end that HBCU lawsuit, that's been major. And what was really great about that was the bipartisan support. I mean, we got it out of the Senate 47-0. And actually had a bipartisan sponsorship of that legislation. So that one was major.
That never happens anymore, Senator.
No,
47-0.
how about that? And you know, the lesson that I learned last year when it was passed out at 47-0, I had a number of Republican legislators come up to me, and some expressed that they had family members that had gone to these HBCUs. So my lesson learned is you never take any vote for granted. You got to talk to everybody. The second piece of legislation was Senate Bill 187, which is just got out of rules over in the House, and we have the cross file over here. It's a bill trying to put a framework and some regulation around forensic genetic genealogy. And that's that process that was used to catch the Golden State Killer over in California. We worked for a number of years on this and with a broad coalition of ethicists, genealogists, defense attorneys, police, or I should say chiefs and sheriffs, and state's attorneys, and tried to kind of set some guidelines around it. When I first went in into looking at this legislation and the technology, it kind of scared me, and I trying to figure out how it related or how the Fourth Amendment wasn't being violated when this stuff was used. And I'm talking about for family members who did the DNA test maybe with Ancestry.com or something. And next thing you know, their family members are being arrested because of their DNA. So there were a lot of questions around it. So we had a lot of experts come in, give feedback, help to craft legislation. So the bill has crossed or passed in both houses. So we now just need to make certain that the Senate version passes in the House and the House version passes in the Senate. So just because of the work and the effort that went into that, I'm extremely proud. We will be the first state to have this type of legislation that I think will be a model for the rest of the country.
Well, we're going to let you get back into doing what you're doing. Appreciate you. We owe you a crab cake in the 44th now. So we got to make sure we get this together, right? I'm doing crab cake
that. Democracy
is what we're going to call it. I mean, Nixon had ping pong. I got crab cakes. All
there
right.
There you go.
Look, thank you all very much. I appreciate your time.
Senator Charles Sidner joining us here from Annapolis to West Baltimore and beyond on behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller. We'll be eating crab cakes and shipping them out of Fadley's and our partners over at Lexington Market. Damie was trying to get me some fresh fish home this weekend, so I'll be doing that. My cat likes the shrimp over there, so don't tell anyone. The seafood thing. State Fair as well, some chicken and waffles and some shrimp and grits. Don and I will be out next month with some more live shows and probably crab cake there as well right before the Preakness. I am Nestor. He is Don. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. I feel like Clark Kent with my Ravens logo here. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.